you late. Aloha, Mud Babies, Pod People, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. Big show today. Big, big show. I know you all have been hearing about Ben Kronberg on Last Comic Standing. Went out, got told a little something by Roseanne. It's turned into a big deal on the internet. It's blowing up. Ben is everywhere. It's all over Twitter. There's hashtag wars going on. And I'm going to have Ben on today to tell us the real story about what's going on with Last Comic Standing. I don't know if you're watching the show. I know I should have probably done the show. I would have liked to have tried out. Probably should have, but I didn't. So maybe next year, if it's still around, I will try to do Last Comic Standing. I've had people go, you're better than that. No, I'm not. And to prove that point, I got a comic that's as good as any comic in the world, if not better than some. I got my guest, Ben Kronberg. And let's go to the interview. I taped this a little bit earlier. Used Skype for the first time. I had to mess with it. I've never done Skype before. It's kind of, there's new knobs and things. But I got it worked out. I think the sound is pretty good. Here we go. It's Ben Kronberg on Remasculate. All right, finally, after all this time of jacking around with Skype and hoping to find out how this works, we've got Ben Kronberg. How are you, Ben?
I'm really good. I'm doing quite well now, yeah. Actually.
Let me give you a little bit of the background here for the people. You know, I know you know your own background, but you're supposed
to. I know the story.
Yeah, you go. This is from your Comedy Central page.
Okay.
I don't know how updated this is, but you know, since his breakout performance at the HBO Aspen Comedy Festival.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. You've been on Jimmy Kimmel Live and Last Call with Carson Daly. And now just recently on Last Comic Standing, which has caused, you know, this whole thing of, hey, Ben, go fuck yourself.
Yep.
Now, did you start that or did somebody else start that?
Well, I mean, you know, the whole guess on who, you know, who started what, you know, I mean, Roseanne is the one that told me on national television, though it was bleeped and blurred, but you can still kind of tell what's being said. She told me to go fuck myself, and so then I had an idea once she had done that, and I was like, well, if they ever air that, I want to make a meme out of it, you know, one of those things where it's just a picture with the words and stuff.
Right,
and
right.
So I was kind of planning on doing that. And then, you know, just as luck would have it, somebody else kind of had thought the same idea, but they had contacted me. But it was more about the hashtag, creating it into a hashtag, which is, you know, kind of like a you know, that new way to kind of locate, you know, a different idea or a topic.
Right.
You know, you can just put in a hashtag. It's like a keyword. It's just like a search. And so he's like, you should have it be a hashtag. So whatever people do, whether it's like a meme or a video or a picture, it'll all kind of go into one spot. And so I did that. And we just kind of, you know, got a couple people to do joke ones. And it just sort of started catching on. And now the ones that people have been coming up with are even more than I could, you know,
hope
even
for.
Way more creative than I could hope for or solicit.
I love the one that I just saw while I was looking up some stuff of the big chubby guy. And he looks like he's underwear.
He's a German comedian. I met him in Berlin recently, and he did that thing. It was so amazing, right?
Yeah.
Well,
I think, you know, you're getting more attention from this in a good way than you would probably if you would have won it. And I've talked to several comics in the past. You know, even on Star Search days, if you won it, you didn't really win anything. You know what I mean? Who do you know that won Star Search? I'm sitting here. I went all the way to the semifinals one year, and I'm sitting here in my basement talking to you.
Well,
you know?
At least you have a basement. That's pretty good.
I guess that's true.
I don't have a basement yet, so I'm hoping one day I can get me a basement.
I want a basement one day. But yeah, did you, so I guess that would be the question. Did you go into this already semi-knowing what you wanted to do to work this angle, or did you just kind of wing it?
Yeah, it just came out of the, you know, blue, this thing that happened. I mean, I participated in it because it's sort of like, oh, you can win, you know, $100,000 or something, and then a development deal where you get $250,000 and another holding deal and all these sort of things. It's like, whoa, oh, you mean all the things that you fantasize about being a comedian or in the entertainment industry, this thing could maybe equal that. So, you know, I knew all the stigmas on Last Comic Standing, but it was sort of like, you know, I've been doing comedy for a while now, and I also didn't want to just, I found I have much better success with just everything in comedy and in life when I just agree to it and say yes as opposed to saying no, because it's like our egos tell us to say no so many times to opportunities that would be perhaps missed opportunities that you wouldn't, you know, you never know what's going to happen, and it's the ego that tells you that, like, oh, if I go on this, they're going to make me look like this. Well, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, that almost kind of did happen. Like, they, you know, they tried to
manipulate it,
make me not look so good. But at the same time, it was like, well, I still got TV time. I still got a little bit of internet buzz. I got, you know, I was able to, because it's like, as long as they're talking about you,
that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. And that's one of the things that I learned kind of early on in comedy, whereas like everybody is definitely focused on trying to be funny and be the funniest, which that's good. But again, that's really ego based. Or you know, just wanting to be the funniest, and you know, there's always going to be somebody that's funnier than you, that kills harder than you, that all those things. And I think the one thing that you can kind of be more in control of on a consistent basis is being memorable.
Yeah,
you know, making sure people remember you. So I always try to just like insert things into my act or the thing to where people, they're like, they remember me. Oh, he's the guy that uses his notebook. Oh, he's the guy that didn't say anything at first. Oh, he's the guy that, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Like, so. Yeah, I agree with you, because I've always felt that way about the way that I've always looked on stage. You know, like the like now, like there, you know, you have your own look with the beard,
and
I've always been that same way. You know, like, well, why don't you cut your hair? Well, why? Then I become that another white boy on stage.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I think you have to kind of find your own thing that way too.
Yep. Be it your, you know, whatever it is that you do, you know, like having something like a catchphrase like Larry the Cable Guy or the You Might Be a Redneck thing was like, you know, those are perfect things. It's because it's not that those things are the funniest things. Those things are just memorable. People remember those bits and those little things. And it's just like,
yeah, but now you're going to be having people shout out, go
fuck yourself. I just did a show in St. Louis last night, and this girl that I'd never met before, maybe on the internet, we exchanged whatever, and she just came right up to me and said, go fuck myself. But it was good, because it's like that thing of like, it's actually turned into like an endearment, you know? It's like if you're telling me to go fuck myself, you're actually on my side as opposed to
against you.
What Roseanne was, which was funny, because right after she did that, she tweeted, even after the taping, before they aired it, she was like, who is that comedian I told him to go fuck himself? I take it back now. I think he's a genius. He sacrificed himself to me, the comedy goddess.
Ah, jumping on the Ben bandwagon.
Yeah, and so then she did another thing. Whenever after it aired, she said that she changed her mind and that she thinks I'm fantastic now. Though she hasn't really interacted with me above and beyond that, and I'm sure like contractually, they're probably just trying to keep our interactions to a minimum. You know?
Yeah. But I think, you know, it was great for both of y'all, because, you know, it's become the talk. Both of y'all's pictures are showing up in the news on all the stuff together. You know, it's a good deal. Now, I have heard people. Well, let's back up just a little bit. You started here in Denver. That's where I know you from. And what made you decide to go to New York?
Well, after Denver, I moved to LA for a couple years, and it was kind of just traveling around. I was in between places in LA, and I started doing colleges, and I went and visited a buddy that I'd known from the sixth grade, and he had been living in New York for a couple years, and I visited him, and I was just like, I told jokes there, I you know, I got a blowjob in the back of a cab my first night.
And you went, I need to be.
Uh-huh. It was like this sort of like, I don't know what sort of tourism board you guys have going on, but I really like it. You know, like, I don't know who's in charge of all that.
Did you happen to look around the cab for cameras? Because I remember they were doing that on HBO for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't, but I should have, but I also didn't care, you know.
Yeah. So
it was fun.
You had already started down the road here in Denver, Colorado, of doing your own thing. And
yeah.
Did you feel sort of a backlash of that here? Or is that one of the reasons you thought, I think I'm going to
move?
Yeah.
No, it was literally just like I had lived in Colorado for, you know, 30 years of my life. And I kind of felt I needed to change. Also just wanted to experience things differently, you know, just experience the bigger version of what comedy was. And I wasn't necessarily, you know, I didn't have the privilege or the thing that was like, you know, oh, I'm starting to tour and book gigs and stuff. It's like the only way that people are going to know who I am is by getting out there physically, you know?
Right.
And like, internet definitely helps, but it's like you need to work all the angles just to fucking, just because there's so many comedians and so many people trying, you know, vying for attention. It's like you just have to get it wherever you can.
Make the noise where you can.
Yeah, exactly.
So the people that can't see this, because you and I are Skyping, this will only be on podcast. You are obviously rolling something.
I'm rolling something.
Are you making your own, quote, cigarettes? Or?
I'm making my own cigarette, for sure.
That's pretty funny.
What I'm doing. Well, I like to be productive, you know.
It's called prep.
If I can, yeah. I'm prepping for a show. I got another show tonight. I got a movie to see this afternoon. What are you going to do, you know? What are you going to do? It's like weed is way less expensive than concessions.
Well, true.
But
see, now you left Colorado where it got legal.
Yeah, true. But I still come back. I was just back there, and I come back there quite frequently. So it's nice. If I still live there, just because I do like to smoke weed, it might be a dangerous thing, you know?
Well, that's true. I was talking to John Novosad the other day, you know, hippie man. And he was telling me, he goes, you know, I thought since it's legal now, I thought I'll be a good person and I'll go to the store and I'll do it like you're supposed to. And he goes, wow, it was expensive. So I went back to my old source.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I overheard somebody in one of the dispensaries saying that like a lot of the local people are let me do this right this time.
That's okay.
A lot of the local people are doing that, are doing their local drug dealer or their weed dealer, not just the dispensaries. But there's a dispensary that I found that's on the 16th Street Mall that it's called Euflora or something like that. It's literally like right at the beginning of the mall by that new 7-Eleven or that newish 7-Eleven across from the Pavilions.
Uh-huh.
They have these like $10 joints, and you could just go in there, buy a $10 joint, and
pow,
and then bam, you know, you don't got to worry about nothing.
Then go right over to the Pavilion movie theater.
Yep, and go to the parking garage, smoke it, and then.
What movie are you thinking about seeing today, if possible?
I think we're gonna see X-Men, the new X-Men movie, because I heard it's really good and. It's a fun, you know.
Actually, it's very good.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I went to the screening preview. Now would be the perfect time for me to actually just throw my review in since I haven't done it.
Yeah, throw it.
Yes, I went to see it, and it's very good. I'm not a huge X-Man fan, but this movie was great. I mean, as far as storyline, the special effects, I have never seen special effects this good. You ever know when you watch like CGI and you can kind of go, yeah, that's a little blurry in the background. That's a little, you can see the edges of that still. Uh-huh. Nothing. None of that in this movie.
Huh.
So there's nothing to take you out of the moment. There's nothing worse than bad CGI to go, I'm out of the movie now.
Yeah, bad CGI is like a bad boob job, you know?
Yeah, you spend all this money and you don't, that's not where all the money went. I don't understand this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, who's your favorite X-Man?
I mean, you know, hard to say. You know, I guess if I was a sociopath, it would be Professor X.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not.
If you're a psychopath, it would be.
I don't want to mind control people. and manipulate people per se, I guess, even though I'm a comedian and that's a lie. But Wolverine is cool just because he's ripped and in shape. I would care more about being in Hugh Jackman's shape than having knives come out of my hands.
You know, for a guy that's like, he's 45, 48, something like that now, he is just totally buff. It's disgusting. I hate him.
It's kind of disgusting. Every time I take a bite of a cheeseburger, I just hate myself thinking about Hugh Jackman.
Exactly. Yeah. So did you see the last Wolverine movie where he goes to Japan?
Yeah, I actually liked that one quite a bit. I thought that one was really good.
I thought it was pretty good, too. I thought the special effects, again, good there. They seem to be getting the X-Men effects down.
Yeah, they know how to do it. They're really tightening up their operation.
Well, have you watched all of the X-Men movies, or pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much I have. I think I have. I've seen them. I've been in a hotel room while any given X-Men movie was on.
I have not seen enough of them over the time to realize where the transition of Wolverine's blades came into play. You know, they went from being like bone to metal.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. There was one of them that did explain how he got turned into metal, and I think it had to do with, you know, partly with the guy from the last one where they did a thing where they were able to perform a surgery on him because of how strong his own bones were, that then they covered his bones in this stuff because he could heal,
right?
You know, so it's sort of like this combo of like nature and nurture, like, and that's his I think Wolverine's thing is that because he's partly mutant, but he's partly also, like, you know, he's been violated by science.
Haven't we all?
We've all been violated by science.
Yeah. I always think that Hugh Jackman, the reason he even got me on the very first one years ago, because I wasn't even excited about seeing it, but I went and then I loved it, was the fact that Hugh Jackman makes that character seem real human. He pulls it off.
Yeah, he is. He's not just an oaf or a thing. I mean, Hugh Jackman's a really good actor, so he brings it to the table. He's a good.
Yeah, remember the first time I saw him, the claws came out and he made it. You know, this thing, like, it really hurts me. It hurts me when I do this. Not like I enjoy this, and I felt the empathy for him.
Yeah.
Much like people were doing the night you were on Last Comic Standing.
That's what I feel like. Yeah, I mean, I think there was maybe some people in the audience that were empathetic, but it's hard when you're like, that audience was there for 4 hours by the time I got up there, so you really boil down any of that empathy to its most base sort of form, where it could just be gone, you know.
Now, when you came off stage, how was the reaction from the comics around you? Did they high five, low five, ignore? What was your?
Well, they asked me what happened because we all kind of we'd all kind of talk about, like, oh, what did they say to you? How did it go? What happened? So that was kind of like the gossip backstage, and so I was able to kind of tell my story. They also had me tell my story to the cameras, which they didn't show any of that business. You know,
that's when you know you're not really going to make it much further, is when they don't show a little backstory.
Yeah, you know, I knew. Yeah, you know, like, whoever they're showing the little documentaries of, those are the people that are moving forward.
Exactly. When they show when he was born with a bad leg, mm-hmm. and it didn't mm-hmm. stop him from doing what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I didn't have any story like that. I was just an arrogant prick who knows comedy better than Roseanne.
Well, you know, no,
she said that to me. She's like, you think you know comedy? Yeah. Oh, she said, oh, you know comedy better than me, which I never said that, you know, but those were just the words of the exchange, which Roseanne's a Scorpio. My girlfriend's a Scorpio. They're born on both the same day. And the only other person that I've perhaps fought with more intensely than Roseanne is my girlfriend.
Well, right after that happened, you know, I don't know if you saw, I tweeted both of you guys on the same tweet.
Yeah.
Come on, man, play nice now.
That was the thing. I was playing. I felt like I was being playful during the thing, during the exchange, but she, you know, she didn't, you know, she wasn't having any of the playful fun, so, which is fine, because sometimes, you know, we can't always be synchronized.
Well, when you go into that, I'm sure when you go on TV for her, like, you go into that judge mode, you know, you're mm-hmm. sitting there, I'm supposed to be, you know, the authority. I have to act like I know more about this. Maybe you just sort of lose your playful aspect.
Yep. It's true.
What about the other judges? How did they take it?
You know, they were kind of more, they were the support system, so they were kind of just supporting. You know, they softened a little bit of what she said, you know, gave a little bit of a compliment, like, I think your jokes are funny, but then went right into, like, but you use your notebook on stage, and I think that's kind of, you're kind of hiding behind your notebook, and it's kind of gimmicky and all those sorts of things, so then that just took it into the direction of that.
Right, and I don't want to call you, I would never call you out on this, because as you know, I think you're one of the funny guys around, you know, so this isn't it. So the notebook on stage, Janine Garofalo did that, you know, before, and no one chastised her. And, you know, I've taken pieces of paper out on stage to remind me of what I want to say. I don't think that's a big deal. So I don't understand what they were going. They just wanted to go after you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that thing of, like, they're, as judges, they're sort of just looking, you know, they have to balance out their praise and their criticism. So when they, you know, it was just the easiest thing for them to say, that shouldn't be there, or why is that there? But, like, I did my notebook and the pause joke for the initial round that wasn't taped for the executive producers, and they, you know, they knew that I was doing it, so, you know, I got it approved to do it, but I also knew, just via past criticisms and other things, I knew that it was a possibility, but it's always a possibility, you know what I'm saying?
Like, now, you were aware, and I'm sure, that people are going to go, why'd you come out and do an old joke?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the thing. Like, I didn't know if they were talking about, because I had done that on my half hour, if that's why they were calling it old. They didn't really reference, like, it's an old joke. They didn't say, this is this person's joke. Like, oh, that's Louis C.K.'s joke or whatever. They just said, it's an old joke. But actually, they were referring to on the show, they said that somebody else had done it the night before on one of the other rounds that they taped, and I was like, oh, I wasn't at that round, so I didn't see that. I definitely wouldn't have done anything repeating if I would have known that. And so,
right.
Well, so that's the thing. But that's always the thing. I mean, that's always a fear with comedy too. It's like, well, we're all processing similar ideas. We're all seeing each other perform. Sometimes things slip in that, like, you're like, oh, I have this idea for a joke, but it's like, is that my joke? And blah, blah, blah. And you just kind of have to, I think you have to just keep doing it until you're told otherwise, or until it's proven otherwise, because otherwise you're just driving yourself crazy thinking, like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
if you applied that scrutiny to every single joke, you'd never tell a joke.
Right. But my mic just shut up. Hold on. Uh-oh. I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, okay. Now there was a thread that I was following on the internet. Oh, you're there. I can see the roof.
I just dropped.
That's okay. I can see the roof. There's a thread going that I was following where people were discussing your act, which is, see, again, this is a good thing. People are discussing, and they were saying, you know, why would anybody choose to do that? Going back to the older joke thing. And I said, well, somebody wrote, why would anybody do that? And I wrote back, Kevin Meaney one time went on The Tonight Show and did the absolutely oldest joke in the world. I don't know if you ever heard or saw about this. Huh. Kevin walked out and said, I just flew in from Vegas, and boy, are my arms tired. That was his opening joke. Then he turns to the band and goes, hey, some people might not have heard this before. And it killed. And so it killed. And I think there's a way to be artistic, creative, you know, to use your creativity to work anything in any angle that you want to. So anybody even say that's an old joke is not even, you know, they're not watching you be you.
Yeah, they're just going towards that thing. That's sort of, you know, and it's, I think with jokes too, there's those things of, like, you know, well, there's a lot of people, a lot of comedians that start their shows out like, hey, how's everybody doing? But nobody's like, hey, nobody's calling those people out for that's an old bit. It's just a, you know, it's just like how people operate. Or, you know, a lot of people in between jokes will say, you know what I mean? Like, you guys, or they, you know, they have that thing, but multiple people do it. And it's sort of like, we're all, you know, musicians. It's like, oh, I hear the blues when I hear Jimi Hendrix, or what about Rolling Stones that, like, you know, oh, that's a Rolling Stones song. No, that's a blues song that the Rolling Stones play cooler than, and you've only heard it.
Right.
You know,
they did it better than the original guy.
And so you give Rolling Stones the credit, and not every time, you know, they're not necessarily, hey, this is a Rolling Stones song that they wrote from a, you know, blues song. It's just sort of like, this is Rolling Stones, and you hear a blues song via Mick Jagger's voice.
Are you a Stones guy? Is that?
I like Stones for sure.
Who's your favorite band?
Of all time, I mean, I really like Radiohead. I'm a real Radiohead fan because they know how to rock and roll, but also do some softer stuff. I mean, I really like Alan Parsons Project. I'm really a fan of you know, that Eye in the Sky song. Uh-huh. And all of his stuff.
Genre-wise, what do you listen to more?
I mean, because I listen to anything, really. I have a hard time deciding, like, this is what I want to listen to and this is what I like. So I just sort of, like, whatever is playing, or if, you know, I have too many DJ friends to where it's like they're always just sort of like, here, listen to this. And I'm like, cool. So I really, you know, I like dance music. I like hip hop. I like country. I like everything, really, whatever. It's just because every day, just like movies, like, if it was all the same kind of music and movies, we wouldn't like it. You know what I'm saying? Like, wouldn't it suck if all the movies you watched were just like, they just had music that you liked?
Or were Disney, you know? or were Disney cartoons?
Oh yeah. Ugh.
Have you seen Frozen yet? That's all I ever hear. Have you seen Frozen yet?
Oh, Frozen. Ugh. It'll be a cold day in hell before I see Frozen.
Yeah, I know people that only will go see movies if they have a happy ending. I've been told that. You know, like, I'll recommend a movie, and they go, well, does it have a happy ending? Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's not really supposed to.
Yeah.
It's a real story. It didn't end well in real life. Then yeah. I don't want to see it. I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad is kind of like that, and there's some other people that I know that are definitely like that, that they only want to wind up with the good ending, but... You know, they're still going to have diarrhea later, so I don't know what they're worried about.
Are you talking about the buttered popcorn caused diarrhea, or the
just the general diarrhea that we all have that's inevitable? You know, that, like, it doesn't matter how many good poops you've had in a row, there is a diarrhea that's right around the corner.
Well, what's Ben's message? That what are you striving for in comedy? What is your goal?
Yeah, the goal. I mean, similar to any comedian's goal, I suppose, is to be a working, functional comedian, but also have that open up. And it's definitely been happening, but have it open up the other opportunities that you can do. Like, I'm not necessarily into being a writer. I'm more into I'd be more into being on camera and auditioning and being on things. That's why I do a lot of web series and, you know, short films and stuff is kind of how I'm, you know, kind of working my way to be in that realm.
I saw a couple of the web series a while back. It's been a while, but you were, I think it was you playing a killer.
Yeah, serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Ted and Gracie. It was we did about seven episodes, maybe six or seven episodes. And it was really fun. It was like, you know, cause it's a comedy, but it's definitely kind of like a darker comedy. And my friend Jenna Friedman, who now writes for the Daily Show, she kind of wrote it and came up with these characters in the story and asked me to do it, and
it worked so well.
That kind of helped, you know, kind of get me out there more. And so once people saw that, they would, like, hey, you want to be in my student film, or you want to be in this, blah blah blah, or, you know. So it's just sort of like chipping away, just like you do with comedy. It's like you just keep going to open mics until you get invited to the book show, and you do that book show until you can get, you know, it's like...
Well, right now you're doing, like, just one-nighter clubs, it looks like, right? You're just going town to town to town to town?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, a couple clubs here and there. Like, I just did Stand Up Scottsdale a couple weeks ago, and then... Next week I'm going to be at Comedy Club on State in Madison, Wisconsin, from June 5th through the 7th. But those are those are clubs that you can get, because I don't have an agent right now, so those are clubs that you can kind of get without having the agent.
Right.
And like those funny business guys like the Yoder and
yeah, there's a few guys you can just call up yourself and say, hey,
yeah,
are you open? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that those have been really good. And I did a tour through the South in mid-March. And then I went to Paris and Berlin. And these are all gigs I kind of just extracted from the internet and internet relationships and Twitter and Facebook and all those things that kind of allowed me to just connect with people that were like, had venues or they booked shows or they're comedians themselves, and just it was really nice to experience this community, so I didn't have to feel like, oh, here I've done all these things and I can't utilize them because I don't have an agent. And that's kind of one of the worst things, is experiencing, you know, certain little milestones of success but not having
right.
the other things around them that would let you.
Yeah, don't you miss the days of being able to go, well, call my agent or ask my agent or have somebody like
yeah.
the agent take care of stuff and book the
yeah.
thing and tell you what days, and you know, because a lot of times you'll go, oh, yeah, that sounds good to me, then realize, oh crap, I agreed to something I didn't even look at my calendar about.
Yeah and the, you know, and then you're not even dealing with the agent, you're just dealing with the agent's assistant, you know, like
right.
here, you know, and then, you know, try to build a relationship with them. And
who was your agent in LA?
Well, I didn't really have an agent in LA when I was living there. I had a manager, and so I was with 3 Arts and Principato Young when I was out in LA. But then once I moved to New York, I stopped working. With
yeah.
Principato was the last one that I was with, and then I was working with CAA for a bit, for about a year, I'd say. But then it was just sort of that thing of, you know, not much was happening, and I was getting more gigs for myself, and I was just sort of like, you know, my half hour had come out over the summer, but nothing,
right?
But I would see other people that got the half hour, you know, the same season, and I would see their posters up in the comedy clubs and the things.
And you're like, how is this happening? How
yeah.
are they getting that? What do I have to do?
Yeah, and it's just like nothing is created equal, and likewise nothing is fair in any sort of thing. And so,
well, as it turns out now, you probably have noticed this. If you're not on Chelsea Lately, you're not really
yeah.
going to be getting a lot of work.
Yeah. Chelsea Lately does seem to get the, but I heard they're canceling that show. Is that true?
I've heard that too, that she wants out or wants to move on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know what comics are going to do now.
Yeah, exactly. Like where am I gonna? I haven't been on that show, but either way, it's always nice to have the option. I mean, that's the great thing about like TV spots, is like, oh, you can try out an audition for them, and if you don't get it, it's fine, because oh, they shoot a show every day. You know, there's still always a chance you could possibly do it, right? It's
right.
Like,
but there's nothing worse than auditioning and not getting it. Isn't that a horrible feeling?
I
just did
yeah.
that just myself today. I found out I auditioned for Longmire, the TV show Longmire. And
oh.
I found out today that I didn't get it. So, you
yeah.
know, there's that 3 or 4 days of like, okay, all right, I know it went well.
Yeah.
I know it went well. They liked it. And then you go, okay, well, thanks. Keep me in mind.
It's the truth. It's the truth. But it's fine. It's like, it's learning, you know, like Tony Robbins. I don't know if you know Tony
yeah.
Robbins.
Walk on Fire, dude.
Anthony Robbins. One of my favorite quotes of his, or I don't know if it's just a quote that he disseminated, but it's the key to success is being able to deal with massive amounts of rejection.
And it's true.
And that is this idea of like, you know, I mean, succeeding is, you know, like doing good isn't succeeding. It's being able to deal with all the shitty, bad stuff and the people saying no and the rejection and still being able to go forward. And that's the, you know,
yeah.
that's a constant. It's the constant lesson that has to be learned.
But
you
that
know?
That thing of rejection, after you've had some good success and you feel the success and you know a good show and you know that I can hit this every time, that becomes a really scary thing of going into elements that, you know, like I know it's going to be great on stage here at the Comedy Works, but if I do it at a bar with 12 people, how is this going to go?
Yeah.
So
yeah, and vice versa. It's like, how do I translate all my bar material to the club?
Do you feel that there's a big difference, or do you enjoy one more than the other?
I mean, I perform at colleges mainly. It's probably indie gigs, colleges, and then clubs in that order of quantity of what I perform in, and they're all definitely different and unique in their own way. I like them all. I mean, I like the clubs because you can really the first Wednesday or Thursday night show is a little bit you have to figure out the room and what you're doing right there, but by Saturday or Sunday or whatever your last show is, you feel that sort of, you really feel that development and that sort of like how you've honed it in and
I've got this down.
You're controlling it and you don't really get that opportunity when you're doing a different room each night or like a college, which, you know, college kids that you're performing for generally are freshmen. So they're basically seniors in high school.
Right. Right.
But without the confidence, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're freshmen in college. So they're like, they just were on top of the world and now they're back figuring out where they fit in. And then so like performing for that type of audience is different because they don't really have a lot of the life experience that would lend to people being open to laughing about certain things that,
well, what do you, you find know, they relate to more?
I mean, it all depends. Every school is different and that's the thing. Like, I do a lot of wordplay jokes. I do, you know, a lot of puns and things like that. But then I also, you know, I'm a fan of poop jokes and as I'm a male comedian, I definitely have my fair share of dick jokes. And so like those things are definitely, some of those things are safe. Like poop and dick jokes can be fairly safe.
At all times.
Yeah. And in the real world, poop and dick are kind of like dangerous, but on stage they're safe. But then other things, depending on like, you know, sometimes I'll do a call, like a Catholic school, and they'll say, you know, I'll have to sign a contract that says like, you know, please don't make fun or talk about the Catholic Church in a negative light and all these things. And so those are interesting too, because
the things you have to learn to talk really, around.
Yeah. And sometimes they're really good audiences too. Like, you know, you just never know. But I mean, I like that comedy has that variety that like, it's not just, you're not just performing in one context. There's like all these contexts. It's like, oh, I'm performing in the middle of a day for this weed festival, or I'm performing, you know, I'm doing this little weird corporate gig, or it's like there's all these. It's great to be a comedian and have all these different uses for your.
Okay, now you're gonna have to tell me this because I want to know what it feels like to work in the middle of a day at a weed festival. How does that feel, and how does that? I can't imagine walking out to a bunch of stoners and going, "All right, I hope the timing's right. I hope you get this. I hope the delay of your laugh doesn't affect my timing."
That's sort of one of those free passes, because whenever people are at a festival, you definitely want to make people laugh. But a lot of times they're just throwing comedy in there because they think it would be cool, and even if it's not going to work, but those times are kind of fun because you just sort of like, the expectations are low and the experience is really weird, and it's just like, you know, like the last one I did, it was sort of like there was all these bands going up and I was supposed to go in between the bands, but you know, none of the bands knew that I was supposed to be going up, so the whole time it was pretty much just like there was a sound change
going on behind
you.
Yeah,
there was always a sound change going on, so. And some bands didn't want me to go up between them, and so it was all that thing. And but it was fine because you know it's like, here, you're gonna get paid this money, and I'm like, I'll do it because whatever,
because it's a paycheck.
I'll perform tomorrow night for a perfect audience and not get paid. So yeah, I'll balance it out with this shitty situation and get the money.
I'm gonna have to learn that attitude myself, because I've always been the, like, you know, I only want to do these good gigs. I turn down things like, you know, hey, it'll be between, like the same thing. It'll be between bands. It'll be great. And I'm like, no, mm-hmm. I've seen that. It's never great. Uh-huh. But thank you. You're right, though. That extra builds extra character. You might even think of a new joke while you're up there because you're battling. You know?
Yeah, and at the worst case scenario, you're making money. You know, it's like, you know, and if you can do that, I mean, it's the, you know, yeah, it's hard, but you have to really just keep that thing, because I know I've definitely, you know, wanted to say no to things, but I'm also, I've gone periods of time where it's like, oh, I don't really have any gigs right now, and it's like that's why the more I say yes, the more I can say yes too.
Right.
You know, the more you say no, the less, you know.
like you
the
said
less
earlier,
opportunities
be,
will come your way.
Be open to everything. Just kind of be float along. Just go.
Yeah, I'm a total floater. I'm a total floater. Yeah, you're gonna have to flush again because I'm a floater.
Life is like a box of chocolates thing, just floating through the air. What is your favorite joke right now that you're doing, or your favorite bit that you're doing?
I have a couple that I enjoy. One of them. Been doing a lot of like jokes about my dad lately and stepmom and stuff, and so I there's one where I say, not wishing my stepmom a happy Mother's Day is what I got my mom for Mother's Day.
Oh, it's deep.
It's a G-rated one, but it definitely like hits home with people in their situations. Or when Luke Skywalker wears really tight pants, he gets Mark Hamill toe.
Very nice, Mark Hamill toe.
Yeah. So those are kind of two of the ones that I like.
Very tweetable.
Yeah, they're tweetable.
Do you go through your own tweets on your act? Because that's one of the things that I've been doing now is going and reading my tweets before I go on stage to sort of remind myself of some funnier things that I wrote that aren't in my act.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it's sort of this thing of like, and I'll go through because I have the Twitter analytics turned on for my tweets, and so I can go back and it actually like it like categorizes like these are your best tweets, these are your really good tweets, and it saves them up to a certain point, and so I can go through and kind of like, correlate like, oh, this tweet got a lot of faves or a number of retweets, so it might actually be a good one to do on stage. And so I've been doing that, and so I've definitely converted some tweets to jokes. I've definitely tweeted jokes, like past jokes that I have, right. And it's like, oh, it's Mother's Day, I'm gonna do my Mother's Day
just
joke
get it out
as
there
a tweet.
Yeah. Now tell me more about this Twitter analytics. That's something that I haven't not aware of. Or
well, it was I think once I became verified, and I don't even know how I got verified.
You got the blue check mark.
Yeah, I got the blue check mark. I think it was after I did the half hour, but they were kind of, whoever was, because they were starting to incorporate a lot of Twitter into the airings now. So like they'll put your Twitter handle below while you're performing.
Yeah.
On like
so it scrolls stuff across the bottom.
And so because they're doing that, I think that sort of outreach and relationship between Twitter and Comedy Central, they kind of, and then I think being verified, my account was eligible to do that, so I did it, and it's pretty, it's interesting because you can kind of, it also shows you like, oh, like because of this, because somebody retweeted this, it now reached 10 times your normal reach because somebody who had like 20,000 followers retweeted you, and now this tweet that you tweeted reached all these people,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it really kind of shows this.
Are you ever surprised by the tweets that you're like, this should have gotten so much more. The response to this sucks. This joke was better than one
absolutely
like.
Absolutely. It's just like jokes. It's just like jokes. You're like, that joke is a funny joke. That joke should have done good or, done better. And
are you finding out that certain times of the day tweets do better? Like if you tweet something in the morning, it might get retweeted more. If you tweet something at 2 o'clock in the morning, the stoners might like it.
Sometimes not. There are definitely like better times during the day, but I've definitely tweeted something on a whim and just because I wanted to get it out and not like sit on it or draft it. And it did really well. And it was like late at night that I wasn't expecting any sort of traction. But then like I'll think, oh, people are early afternoon, late morning, early afternoon, where people are probably at their computers, thinking something's going to do well, and it doesn't. So
the general public who thinks that they're funny, just when you look at Twitter and you just scroll and see the general public, I wonder what goes through their head when they think this is going to be great.
Yeah,
and then it gets like nothing.
Yeah, or if they even have that, or if they even bring that to the thing,
that they even try or care.
Yeah, like I assume they probably do, and you want to emulate the people that you're following. So if you see somebody getting a lot of retweets, you might be like, hey, I want to get retweets like them, and it's you know.
What's your advice to people who are now getting on Twitter? Because I always get asked all the time, well, I tried it and it was just stupid. That's because you didn't know what you were doing, you know.
Well,
how do you tell people, this is what Twitter does?
My advice is just don't think about it and participate in it. And because the more you think about something, the more you'll talk yourself out of it, no matter what, eventually.
That's me. I talk myself out of a lot of stuff. I wrote a tweet the other day that I have not posted yet. Is like, just stop thinking. Stop thinking.
Yeah. Oh. I got some barbecue happening right now.
Oh, do you? Acid reflux?
Yeah. I got some dry rub reflux going on.
Well, tell the people how to find you, because we're coming up on 45 minutes, and that's typically 45 to an hour. So tell people how to find you.
Well, I'm at Ben Kronberg, BenKronberg. Uh-huh. That's my Twitter. That's my Instagram. You know, I'm. You can follow me on Facebook. I have too many Facebook friends, so you just have to follow me on there. If you want.
What? You have 5,000 friends? You have too many.
I have too many friends, but I don't want to do a fan page, because I think Facebook is better for, I mean, at least my thing. I think my friends function as better allies to my cause than like if I had a bunch of fans.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Just, but not fans in general, but just like on Facebook for people to think of themselves as my friend is, I think, a better
psychological thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I did the hit the 5,000, went over, set up the fan page.
You're all over the place. You actually have fans and reasons for fans. You know what I'm saying? You got.
You too, Mr. Go fuck yourself.
Hey, I got. Yeah, I'm fucking myself.
You're blowing up, and I hope you do well. You know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Everybody should follow you. Look up for the hashtag go fuck yourself Ben. That's what it is.
Hashtag
now, right?
Go fuck yourself Ben, and you can make a video telling me to go fuck myself. You can make a Instagram video or take a picture or do a drawing or a meme and then just tag it. You know, just at me and then tag it with the hashtag, and then it'll all kind of go to, you know, this one place called at rebelmouse.com that kind of is this aggregator for where, so like no matter what website people tag that hashtag with, it all goes to this one location where you can then see this page with all of that stuff.
Oh, that's very cool. You are all about working the internet and social media.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am, because it's like you have so much downtime as a comedian and things like that, and so might as well be semi...
Productive. My girlfriend's totally after me. Like, what do you do all day? You haven't even updated your webpage. When's the last time you put your tour dates up? What do you do all day?
is that your girlfriend or your manager?
Well, it's an ex-manager, but that's right.
Yeah,
you and I both, I've talked before, we're both in the same. Yeah, no managers and no agents. Well, this is going good.
Here we go.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and doing this, because you know a lot of people are thinking what's going on and what's the story. So I'm glad that you came on and kind of said, here's the deal.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll be in touch with you. We'll see you out on the road somewhere.
Sounds great.
All right. Take you later, man. All right. Have a good one.
Yes.
Later. See you, Ben.
Bye, Steve.
Thank you. And that's how it went. After a while, trying to figure out Skype. Now I've gotten a little better at this. I was having to jack with it the entire show. Hopefully Skype, that's kind of the digital sound sounds all right. After I got in there and jacked with it a little bit, I found out I got to pull this up and take this down and make that a little louder. I think I got this Skype down. I'll be using this a little more with the guests. Hey, I appreciate you guys listening. Thanks to Ben Kronberg for coming on the show. And I'll see you next time here on Remasculate. God bless America. And go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu.